everybody. Welcome back to the Dharma Toolkit podcast with me, Chandradasa. I'm very happy to be greeting you again in early summer here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, in the United States of America. And very happy to be back at the podcast desk after a little break. I think the last episode we heard was from the Highlands of Scotland. And this week we're going to be going to the other side of the world, but more of that in a second. If you've been enjoying the episodes through the pandemic, if you like this podcast, please tell your friends, please share it. And if you can, take the time to like us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google or wherever you get your podcasts these days, the whole supermarket of podcast shopping that now exists. It's been quite a year and a half for everybody around the world. It's been quite a year and a half in our community in Tri Ratna. And I'm delighted this week to be welcoming two guests from India, very kindly joining us after a long working day in India at 6:30 in the evening. We're going to be talking to them about what's going on in our community in India, in the Tri Ratna Buddhist Order in India, obviously through the COVID crisis, with coronavirus still a major problem. And we're also going to be hearing about their stories. How did they find their way to the Dharma? So I'm going to call in my friends from India one at a time, starting with Abhay Navita. Good evening, Abhay Navita.
Good evening. Yeah, I'm good, but also having lots of heat. And exactly today, we don't have electricity at our home. So I'm a bit boiling here.
Oh, no. Oh gosh, I hope the air cools soon, or you get your air conditioning back or something. Get the fans, the ceiling fans going.
Yeah. Your voice is really like that.
Cooling, thank you.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever said that before. Now I'm blushing. Now I feel all hot. I'm going to welcome your friend, Abhay Navita, Tara Hridaya, who's also joining us. Good evening, Tara Hridaya.
Hello, Chandradasa. Good evening. Yes, I am fine. Here in Pune, it's raining since 2:30. So it's a little bit cooler. Though it is hot every day because it's May. But because it's raining, it is a little bit cooler now. So I'm good and very good to see both of you.
Yes, thanks both for being so kind and saying yes to a request for a podcast, especially after working and in the middle of everything that's going on. I guess it'd be nice to hear, actually, where are you both and what is life like for you at the moment, day to day, Tara Hridaya?
Basically, my native place is, I'm from North India. It's called Uttar Pradesh. But at the moment, I am in Pune. And last 29 years, I think since 1992, I am living in Pune. I became part of Sangha here. So Pune is in Maharashtra, but I travel a lot all over India. But just because of pandemic, I'm just sitting at home at the moment.
And what causes you to travel so much?
I work for ordination process team, women ordination process team in our Sangha, because we train women to go deeper in their going for refuge. And for that work, we do lead a lot of retreats and we visit in different centers in different parts of India. So because of that, I do travel a lot.
And when you're at home, do you live with your family and what's your work?
I live with my family. I have two children, one son and my one daughter and my husband. And sometimes we have other family members visiting us and living with us also, like my mother and my sister. But at the moment, we four are living in Pune. My children are now grown up, but still as Indian culture, it's no matter how old you are, just all family members, they live together. Yes.
I live in Amravati. It's in Maharashtra, and Amravati is quite near Nagpur. We can say that it is a very middle of Indian map, just like the heart of India. So I'm living there, and it's fortunately or unfortunately, I'm living here. I did my education here. I get married here. Even I become a Dhammacharini, means a member of Tri Ratna Buddhist community here. I'm working in a social project which is connect with the Buddhist community. So I'm working full-time there. So everything here in Amravati. But I got many times the opportunity to travel for retreat and even for workshops, for training, for meetings all over India. So I can go out of Amravati sometimes.
When we spoke last week together about doing this podcast, you were telling me all sorts of hilarious stories about being mistaken for each other. You've become friends and Now people think you're the same person. Did you want to tell people about that?
Yeah, I can say that actually, as Sararudha and me is a part of Triratna Buddhist community, and we are here for a long time, I think more than 25 years, we are working in Triratna Buddhist community. I don't know what people find similar in us. Maybe that we look a bit same, we have same size, and maybe that how we speak or how we come in front of the stage or in front of people, maybe our presentation skills or something, what I don't know, but many times people make a mistake within us. Sometimes they told me that, oh, we have seen you on that stage. And I said that I was never there.
It's quite nice. I don't think you look anything like each other at all. Yeah, but you do laugh in a similar way. So maybe people laugh. Maybe people hear you laugh, your laughter. And they think, oh, Tara Hidaya is laughing. You say, no, it's not Tara Hidaya.
So maybe that make us similar.
What do you think, Tara Hidaya? Why do you think people would confuse you and your good friend, Dubai Navita?
I never actually understand. And Abhay Navita and me, in 2018, we were together in Adhishthana for 1 month course. And that was our, I think, first time that we were that long together. Actually, we never been together in a retreat, in a room together. We had one retreat together, but we were not sharing a room. But that was our first time. So we never found that we are looking very much similar. But I don't know why people just make this. But maybe they might find which things we can't see, but they might find something similar between us. One thing, it might be laugh, but another thing, how confidently we come forward and just take initiative. So maybe our qualities, we have similar quality that definitely we both share. But I don't know how we look like that. I don't know for sure.
You don't look like each other at all. I remember meeting you both at the end of your time in England. I think I'd met you in India as well before. I remember one conversation with you about Navita about your work some years ago. At the time when I met you, I just assumed you were very close friends and you spent a lot of time together. But you were saying that that trip to England, to Adhisthana, was quite an important marker in your friendship.
Yes, it was.
Maybe that how people mix us together, that already has create a bond between us. When we got opportunity to stay together, so we don't feel that we are spending time together first time. We feel that we are friends from long time. So I think that is a good that people mistake us together.
In a way, it seems quite appropriate for people to look at you as a pair of friends rather than separate individuals. And maybe people listening to this podcast, maybe it's quite new to them, the idea that we would really see a community as fundamentally a collection of friends. And that's the most important way that we have a network of people practicing the Dharma is through friendship. You both are leading order members in India, and you're helping many women prepare for Dharma life in general, for ordination training. Your personal friendships, presumably they're very important to you, but how have you developed those friendships and how did they bring you into the Dharma life?
I think friendship for me is very important. Since I came in Sangha, especially when I came in Pune. Pune is, if you know who is listening this podcast, if they know a little bit about India, they know that India is very big country. And one state to another state, it's totally different. Your food is different, your language is different, your culture is different. And everything is different. When I came here in Pune, it was totally like going to other country because I didn't know any Marathi. I did not even hear that there is a language called Marathi. So that was very, very new for me. I was very innocent. In very young age, I left my home. I was, I think, 18 when I came in Pune. So the thing which kept me here in Pune and gave me so much opportunities to grow was the friendship with my friends. So I started to live in community, women's community here in Pune. That was our only women's community. And Bhante Sangrakshita had started just a few months before I came here. So friendship was really very, very important for me. And that was the main thing which kept me here and gave me so much courage to just keep going. And just day by day, I think friendship is developing. And that circle of friendship is growing and growing day by day. So I'm really very happy. That's very valuable for me.
It's very beautifully said.
Yeah. I think friendship is a thing which keeps me continue in Triratna Buddhist community. I was so young when I joined this community. I think I was 13 or 14 something. That time, you can imagine that not so important to join Sangha or just being so committed. But even at that time, I can feel and understand the importance of friendship. In the way that we got some people who can listen us, who can understand us, even they can feel our difficulty just like it is their difficulty. And they show us a path in difficult situation. It is just like a blood I experience in my body, in my mind, how I was growing. So I think friendship is a very important factor for me, which kept me continue in Sangha. I am a person who can't live without people. I don't feel so happy to be alone or just thinking about me or staying with myself. So always I want someone with whom I can speak, I can share, I can spend time with them. Even I can be vulnerable in front of them or I can be proud in front of them. All aspects of the life I can share with that person or those person. And that can be only a friendship. And when it is a spiritual friendship, which is on a right track, on a right way, that is, I think, something very important in life. This is one thing I can't live without.
Maybe you could say a bit, Tarashudaya, about how you first encountered the Dhamma and why did it stick with you? Why did you decide, yes, this is what I want to do with my life?
Yes. As I told, I am from North India. And even that time, 28, 29 years ago, Maharashtra was very advanced when I came here. From there, I could not see. But in Uttar Pradesh, it was very backward, especially for women. It was much, much backward that time. Still, it is backward than Maharashtra. And we were living in a very conservative family. It was very orthodox family. And we were 8 sisters. And my father was alone, who was earning money. That time, he was drinking, smoking, doing all sorts of things. And so we did not have a very happy family. Every day we had fighting, we had difficulties. My father used to drink and just come at home. Sometimes he was drinking at home with his friends, though we had a very small room. And just in front of them, he was beating us. He was shouting at us, abusing us. So it was all those things were happening. But the good thing happened that because he was calling himself Buddhist, he was part of one Buddhist organization. And that Buddhist organization has organized a retreat from Triratna. And he went there because he was part of that organization. And when he came back, he was totally changed man. He left his drinking. He left his smoking. His temperament also gone down. It didn't stay for very long, the temperament. But other things were totally gone. He never drank. He never smoked after that. And that was like a miracle for all of us, for my whole family. That inspired us. We were so curious where he had gone and from where he got this change. And then he had a piece of land in Hastinapur, in that small village or small town. And he offered that land, which he did not buy, but he had occupied that land. That was a big thing. He offered that land to the Sangha and requested them to start a center there and start a boys' hostel there. So since then, we were just coming in contact with these order members. Many different order members were coming. And to see them, it was so inspiring. And that just kept me going and kept me in the Sangha and Dhamma. That was very, very important. And it was like a miracle for all of us.
That's wonderful to hear, Tarashudaya. And Abhayanavita, do you want to say something about how you came in contact with the Dhamma? And maybe you could say a little bit about Dr. Ambedkar for people who don't know who Dr. Ambedkar is, and also what brought you into the Sangha and why have you stayed?
I came in Sangha because my parents had joined already and they also want me and my brother to join Sangha. So I was 13 and 14 years, I was already attracted towards Buddhism. Normally, my family is not from background which so easily joined Buddhism. But whatever I was looking around my family and in my relative, it is so similar like how the Sararuddha has shared that most of the family are behaving so dominating, drinking, how they are behaving with their wives and with their daughter. And I also started to feel same thing in my life, that being as a girl, how it's so difficult to survive in this community. We never feel free or happiness when we are in relative or we are in friends or we are at home. I never feel that happiness which I feel in Sangha. Because in Sangha, I never got any restriction being a girl. How should I speak? How should I walk? How should I present myself? What should I wear? As a girl, I have to face those things in Sangha. I feel very safe and open opportunity to develop as a human being. As a girl and as a woman, I feel respect and acceptance in Sangha. And that kept me continue in Sangha. And also in that age, I get opportunity to hear about Baba Sahib. Dr. Ambedkar was a very big and revolutionary social activist. He was just like a hero for Dalit community till 1956. He has worked. Actually, he has given all his life for all downtrodden people, all Dalit people, to eradicate caste and also to eradicate all this discrimination which was going on the base of gender. And being woman or being a scheduled caste person, it was completely very unhuman life for Indian situation before 1956, we can say. But Baba Sahib has fight a lot in his life to change this situation. And he was a very big inspiration for me in my life, because Triratna Buddhist community was one place where I got opportunity to learn more about Dr. Ambedkar and to learn more about his vision and even also how we can implement his thoughts and his vision in our personal practice and in our action. So that I find very inspiring in my life, being in Triratna and as a follower of Dr. Ambedkar.
That was really fascinating to hear by Navita. One thing that occurred to me listening is that in the West, when Buddhists talk about Dr. Ambedkar, they almost always talk about caste, which is obvious in a certain way. But I was struck that you said also Dr. Ambedkar talked very explicitly about ending discrimination on the basis of gender. And I know that's been important in your own work and it's important in the ordination process in India. But Tarapadai, I wonder, can you say something more about how work for women and girls in India and creating a place of safety for practice and dignity and respect, how Dr. Ambedkar's work helps create that atmosphere?
Yes. I knew about Dr. Ambedkar since my childhood, as I told that my father was calling himself a Buddhist. He was a hero, actually. He was a hero of Dalit people. Always we were celebrating his birthday, which is largely celebrated in India. That is the only Jayanti or birthday, that largest celebration going on all over India. Now I heard that all over the world also, many people celebrate his birthday. So that was how I came to know about Dr. Ambedkar. And my father was a very good person. Actually, he was a very knowledgeable person. And he was standing in front of all the people in that locality. We were the only people who were Buddhist. And people were just teasing us about it. But he was fighting with the whole society there, being a Buddhist, being an Ambedkarite person. And that gave me a lot of confidence, as Abhinavita said, that Baba Sahib has fought for all the people. I would say not only fought for scheduled caste people, he fought for women and he fought for all the people. It's the all society, which one by one, his benefits, whatever he has given to us, is coming now. And those that work is coming in light now. Because now we see that many people are working. They used to work 14 hours a day, 12 hours a day. And we see that Baba Sahib has given that law. He has made a provision in constitution that everybody should work for 8 hours. And that now people are understanding that provision made by Dr. Ambedkar, not anybody else. you asked especially about the girls and women. So we see that he has written the Hindu code bill. And if we read that Hindu code bill, that's not for particular one caste women. It is for all women and all caste and background, which are also coming now. And many people are taking benefit of it. Even some women don't know from where they got these benefits. They got right in property. They can remarry if their husband died. They can have property from their husband's side. They can have education. Then they have maternity leave. So all these benefits, they got from that Hindu code bill. There are many, many provisions that Dr. Ambedkar made. But unfortunately, when he was there and he put it in parliament, that time it was not passed. And because of that, he has resigned from his ministership. So that was an unfortunate thing. But we can see that how he was so careful and he was thinking about women who were so suppressed in Indian society. So he was fighting for them, no matter that they understand or not. But he was fighting, and if their welfare was not secure by him, so he was not ready to even stay in the politics. So that was a really very big sacrifice for all women. So I must say that he made this society safe and very easy for women. It's not very safe still, because though he made all these provisions and all the laws, it's depend on people how they are obeying that. But still, he tried to make those provisions, and that's very, very important for all women in India.
Hi, Nandita, can I ask you to expand a little bit and say, in your own work with women and girls, do you think the generation now is more confident than your generation was when you were a young girl and sort of discovering the Dhamma and discovering how to live a life? Are women and girls these days more confident because there's a history of more freedom, or is it still just a big struggle all the time?
Actually, there are two answers about this. As I continuously working with women and girls from last 25 years, I'm seeing different levels, actually, different groups. Some groups are very, very free, very confident than how I was at that time, or maybe how Tarabaya was at that time. Confident in all different ways, how they are wearing clothes, how they got opportunity to wander here and there. Their parents are so easy to give them permission about where should they go and how they should spend their time with friends. It was not that easy at our time. There was lots of restriction about the clothing and also about wandering here and there. So I can see that this is one group. Those girls or those children, if we are as a parent, quite liberal, my friends, girls and their daughters, they have this confidence. They got this opportunity. They got this situation. But still, there are some groups in India still that I'm working with the slum girls, the girls from a tribal area, the girls from very backward class and caste. So they are in the same situation where I was before 25 years, before 30 years, before 40 years. Even I thought that I was in a better situation than they. Still, they don't got all those opportunity of development, all those opportunity of expression. They also face a lot of violence in their life, being a girl and also being from a backward background or from a scheduled caste or from a nomadic tribe. So it is very different about different groups.
And Tartrida, I suppose the same question for you. When young women find their way to Triratna, they come on their first class or they come on their first retreat. Have you noticed any difference across the generations between the women and girls of your own generation and your parents maybe, and then the current generation?
Yeah, definitely we can see the difference. In my age, 30 years ago, when I first time go, I don't remember actually that day, but I was very shy. And my generation was like that. All the dhammacharis were there, men were there teaching us. So we did not allow to talk with them freely or laugh in the class or talk in the class. But now I see when new girls are coming in the classes and they are coming in the retreat, they are allowed to do that. And mostly the young girls are coming, mostly their family members are already in Sangha. So because of that, it gives them courage. And it gives them some freedom also. and they are practicing already. But some women, some girls are coming whose family members are not even in Sangha. But still, the generation gap is definitely there. This generation is more free than our generation. They have more exposure also. We did not know many things. We had very limited exposure, very limited area, very limited knowledge of things. But now the girls from cities, they have more knowledge, but from rural area, they have less knowledge. But still, they have more knowledge and more exposure. They have friends at least from different places. So they get more exposure than us. So definitely that difference is there. But as Abhinavita mentioned, there are always two layers. Or even sometimes three layers you can see. So even in cities also, if girls are coming from backward slum or from very different backward caste, always they find it difficult to mix with other people because casteism and this segregation is very much in our society. It's gone in very much roots of our conditioning. So when somebody from outside of that particular group comes, they find it a bit difficult. So it is our duty that we have to make them comfortable and make it open for all of them. So that we try to do. But definitely there is a difference. I can see that difference. Yes.
Listening to both of you talk about the differences, it strikes me that you must both gain a lot of joy from being able to mentor, to teach other young women coming through. And it must be quite a big difference for them just to have experienced women who are confident, who can show them love and the kind of sense of all the possibilities of an open, free life. What has it been like for you to grow and develop into a senior teacher in a Buddhist order in India?
Actually, it has been really like a journey for me being a teacher, being a Buddhist teacher. I never understand that I was actually learning Buddhism and how I get trans as a teacher, how I get change that I start to teach the Dhamma. It happened so suddenly and so very nicely, actually, very smooth. I enjoyed this journey because I was very energetic young girl, and always if there is a lecture, I was always in front listening very carefully, and after the lecture asking them questions very confidently. So I think I become Dhamma Mitra, when I become Dhammacharini, I start to give a lecture, I start to lead a retreat, I start to lead a study group. Till I feel that passion, that liveliness, when I hear something from someone and I have question and I ask those questions. So I think this is very parallel process going with me, that learning and teaching and learning and teaching. I can influence, I can create that influence that affects girls and women on people's mind. And it made them to think, to change themselves according to Dhamma. And when I see this impact, I really feel very happy. I feel so satisfied. So this process has given me a lot of happiness, lots of joy. But still, sometimes whenever I am in role of teaching the Dhamma, I feel a small gap of sadness or unsatisfaction about how I was so inspired about the Dhamma. I want to see them to be so passionate about Dhamma, so passionate about Dr. Ambedkar, so passionate about changing our own life, developing our own approaches or our own qualities. I want to see that. And that's something sometimes I'm missing, actually. I'm missing that. So that makes me sometimes a bit upset.
That makes sense. Anyone teaching anything, they always want their passion to be like a mirror coming back to them.
Yeah.
And Tara Shudai, what's it been like for you to step into the role of being the leader in our community, and particularly to help people learn how to take their own spiritual life seriously and to commit to it?
Yeah, it's very much like Abhinavita has said, teaching by learning is very important for me. I never thought when I saw all these Dhammacharis back in Hastinapur, they were like gods for me, for my whole family. And we never thought that we can become like them. It was like totally unreachable thing for me, for all of us. But when we start to know they gave confidence that you can also become like us. And we did not just born like you, how we are now. We became by practicing. So that gave us so much confidence that we can also become like that. And since then I started, but still to teach the Dhamma, it was very big thing for me. Since the beginning, I never thought that I would become a Dhamma teacher. I just thought I will just keep learning, which I'm still doing. But it happened that for my work, and just as I was starting practicing, so I started to teach also. But it was always very important keeping up my practice. When people ask me to give a talk, I always think that if they give me some topic, that's better. When people just leave it open, I don't understand what to talk about. I need some topic, because on that topic, I can reflect a lot. I can think, and I can think my own examples, how I am living that subject or how I am doing when I'm practicing on that thing. And then I can do it. But if people ask me very big, big topics or big teachings or big principles, which I am very far from, I find it very difficult to explain them, because that's not my practice. So if I am at least trying to practice any principle or any teachings, I feel very confident to teach about it. And another thing I find is it's not only just giving the lectures, giving the talks or leading the retreats. It's just being with the people, just listening to them, talking about myself, talking about their lives, talking about my life, my practices, their practices, sharing all that is also teaching, and which I do a lot. Day before yesterday, I talked with a Mitra, and she was telling, it's good that you called me. There is an old lady. She was remembering you. And I don't know that lady. And she was saying she was corona positive. And in that situation, she rang me and she was asking, how is Tararudya and her family? I'm just missing her. I never talked with that woman. And I don't even remember her face, who she is. I never heard her name. I don't know in her situation when she was positive, how she remembered me. And please call her, and she would be very happy if you call her. And I asked her, give me her number. And I called that lady, and she was so happy. She is now cured. I'm glad that she is cured. But she was so, so happy that she got a call from me. I did not say, to be honest, that I don't remember you or I don't know. I just make inquiry how you are and this and that, and just made a friendly contact. And I think that for me at this time, it was also a very important teaching, how to just connect with people, because there are so many things are happening in the world at the moment, especially in India around us. So many things are happening. But in that time, just to support. So, and there are so many occasions when I hear from people that that person was remembering you. Could you just please make a call for her, and she would be very happy. Sometimes I just do that. As a Dhamma practitioner, it is very important for me and for those people, because sometimes it also happens that you talk with that person and after some days you hear that that person is no more. So it's so very, very important. And that is the part of my life at the moment, that every day I'm just trying to contact some people. So that's very important.
That's a really strong point, Tararudya. In a way, it comes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, with friendship being the whole of the spiritual life, being the lifeblood of our community. It puts me in mind of the whole situation in India around COVID and coronavirus. All my friends in India have been talking to me about the work of the Sangha in the midst of the pandemic and the work of the order. And it seems the way you described your priority every day is just to be in touch with people, just to be a support and to give people what they need, which is friendship and care, and a sense that someone is aware of them, someone's holding them in mind. Maybe you could both talk a little bit about your experience of India and the pandemic at the moment, and particularly what it's like being in the order. Obviously, so many people have died in the order, so many mitras, so many friends too. Presumably, it's just a very strong period to be a practicing Dhammacharini in a Sangha that is trying to adjust and adapt.
This is really not a good situation. We started to experience this from last March. Before that, we were just hearing news from outside India. And for us, this is difficult two ways. One is we all know that we are worried about this infection, this virus, and lots of people are affecting by this. we know that we lost lots of order member and Mitra from Triratna community. Triratna community has given a very big sense of connection, just like a family. Again, this is Maitri, this is friendship. Though we haven't get opportunity to see each other, meet each other, but still, if we got news of any order member or any Dhamma Mitra, that make us sad, that give us lots of grief that, oh, we lost one order member, we lost one Mitra. These days, we have gone all this news. Even sometimes in one day, we got two news, three news. Our heart was full of sadness. And still, we don't know what will happen, which day will come with which news. Another thing that I am facing every day, one point is the coronavirus, one point is the infection, one point is being fearful about death. And another thing, due to this coronavirus, with those people living their life in very difficult situation, economically, when they depend on daily wages and not having proper earning sources, this pandemic make their situation very difficult. They are not too much worried about the infection. They are worried about dying due to hunger or due to all this pressure and how they will survive. So I am facing both situations. As I told you, I'm working in one of the social projects which is run by Triratna Buddhist community. The organization name is Bahujanita Society Amravati. And through that, every day we are trying to do some relief work. Just now, actually, me and my team, we are 12 and 13 people together. We are trying to reach hospitals, mostly government hospitals, where very poor people can't go to the private hospitals. They can't take their family to private hospitals, so they are going to government hospital. And those are from very tribal area or from a rural area. They don't have resources, they don't have money to buy proper food, to hire any lodge or hotel to stay and rest there. So they just spending their time in one waiting room, and we are trying to support them with meal, we teach them some meditation. Actually, it was very different experience for me and my team. We try to teach them meditation in standing situation. And in our life, we never teach Anapanasati or Maitri Bhavana for concentration or for positive approach. We never teach in 4 minutes or 5 minutes. But instead of having nothing, we try to do whatever least we can do. So we teach them this Anapanasati. Sometimes we teach them Maitri Bhavana. And we finish that meditation in 4 minutes, in 5 minutes, because they want to do that in standing situation. But still, we can see a positive effect on them, on their face, and with that meal and positive surrounding, which we can create for them every day. All over, we tried to do lots of relief work, distributing groceries, even tried to distribute books and stationery to the children. We really always think, why this situation come? And this situation actually should never come in our life. Fear about getting infected, fear about dying with coronavirus, and fear of dying with less resources and hunger and just opportunity of being a human to survive. So we are facing all this difficulty. We are seeing all this situation through our eyes. It's really very difficult. And I'm so thankful that Triratna Buddhist community is taking lots of initiative. I can say only what I'm doing and my team is doing here in Amravati, but from all over India, all our Triratna brothers and sisters trying in their way. Some are distributing food, some are distributing groceries, some are providing counseling, some are organizing retreat and spreading Dhamma in those situations, teaching meditation. Doing all these things, we are getting support from all over the world. And really, I'm so thankful to all my brothers and sisters from outside India also, that they can understand this situation and they are with us to help us. So I'm really so thankful to all my brothers and sisters helping us in any way, in any way. If they are thinking also about us, that's also a big help and concern reaching to us. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Bhairavita. It's been very strong hearing all the tales from India. We did a podcast a while ago with Arya Ketu, who was describing the relief efforts to distribute food in the various slums around where he works and the Aryaloka Institute, but also setting up Wi-Fi so that the children can keep going to school and do online learning. It was very, very good to hear. And in the podcast notes, we'll share some links where people can continue to support Triratna in India and help with equipment and money and all those kind of things. Abhaya Navita gave a very good summary of what's happening in Sangha. Tarashadaya, maybe you could talk a bit about it from your experience, but also maybe what you think the coronavirus pandemic means for our community in the future when you look forward. Obviously, we're still in the middle of things, but if you think about the future, do you think that the pandemic is going to change Triratna in India and the way you maybe think about the work that we're doing?
Yes, Abhaya Navita has told whatever we are doing in Triratna mainly. And she gave a very large picture of it. Definitely in Triratna, in India, it is also going to change. We both are in that age that we never experienced the pandemic. This is our first time. I did not hear of pandemic even.
Yes.
Now I am just hearing on YouTube that every 100 years, one pandemic come and this happened, that happened. I don't know, that might have happened, but this might be the biggest, but I don't know. I'm not sure because I'm not expert in that. But definitely it is going to change our lives. I don't know in India, just to see the size of country and the size of the population, how long it will take to get over the situation. When we talk about the vaccination, it is also very unknown what is going to happen, because sometimes they declare this, sometimes they declare that, and there is nothing happening. What is going on in news is different and what is going on in real field. So we don't know how long it is going to take. It might take this whole year, or it might take even next year, or maybe next couple of years. One thing just in back of my mind, as we were talking about Dr. Ambedkar and about other things, how 70, 80 years ago, or 60 years ago, or even in some places now also, people experienced untouchability. Everybody is experiencing it now. Everybody. It's no matter they are from which caste, or no matter from which background, rich to poor, poor to rich, young to old, everybody is experiencing it in different way, which is not a very good thing. Nobody should experience that. But sometimes people who have experienced it, it was very, very painful for them. And now everybody is experiencing it, is very painful for them. And other thing is, I don't know how it is going to happen, but it might affect people's mind also. The mental health, people have very different type of experience in this time. This is 1.5 years people had been at home, or they have to keep themselves at home. As Abhaya Navita mentioned, there are a lot of people who are struggling for their survival against coronavirus, but at the same time, there are people who are struggling to just earn money and they can get some food. We can't deny that people have to be at home because of fear. I don't know how it is going to affect, but definitely it is going to affect on our work as Triratna, because it taught us a lot. Before the pandemic, we never heard online teaching. We never done online teaching. I think Abhaya Navita was there on 10th of April. I remember that first time we had our international community meeting. That was our first international meeting online. Until then, Zoom, Google Meet, and this and that, we were not introduced at all. Still in our team, many people are there who didn't know. Many retreatants who don't know, who don't have access of internet, they don't have phone. And I see that many women are just borrowing phone for 2 hours, 2.5 hours from their family members. Sometimes even Abhaya Navita have been in some retreats. 2 women are sitting together. They are sharing and they are on phone. So it's a different kind of education also. People are becoming a bit aware, even though they are 70 years old, they are totally illiterate. But this situation is teaching us how to be technology friendly. Still, we are not expert, but little bit. I remember that every time we lead a retreat and the women are in my group. At least half of the women, I have to teach them how to mute and unmute themselves and how to put video on and off. And they wait for somebody, please come, please come, please come. They can't hear me and what is happening, just tell me. These small things, at least I try to teach them in my group. So this is very, very big challenge for us, how we should become technology friendly and we can do things online in future. Because we don't know when it is going to finish. It might take longer than we thought. And maybe we have to think differently also. When we physically meet in the retreat, that gives us different experience. And Indian women's situation, their life around them is very, very difficult, very packed. When they are going in retreat, they are totally leaving their family and house life. But at the moment, they are struggling a lot because they are in the middle of that life. And at the same time, they are attending the retreat online. So they are doing two things together. In that way also, according to the requirement, we keep changing our programs, keep changing our timings, our way of teaching. So maybe somewhere we have to bring some new innovative ways of teaching in that way.
I think Karanude has mentioned a very important point about technology. Now it's become so habitual. And I think there will be some positive effect also of this. This situation is really not good. It should not happen again. But this corona will teach us friendship, importance of human connection. It also has hampered and challenged our ego. I see actually, even just in market, people become so polite, they become so sensitive because everyone are worried about their future, about their present, how we will survive. Survive in all the sense, survive with resources, and human connection is also a big resource, always human need. We can't live without each other. So I think that value, the value of human, Corona has teach us. We will remember these days and then we will value the situation we got in future, which we was not so sensitive about in past. I think always anything, there are two sides and we will see that in future.
It's very lovely to hear you talk about the human aspect and maybe just being more grateful for that, more sensitive to it, remembering that we're all connected in a particular way.
I can see that people become more sensitive towards each other in this time. People in different ways who were not thinking about each other or about others started to think about others also. And because this unpredictability of life, anything can happen. People, their emotions are opening and they are opening doors towards each other. So it's really very good thing. Abhinavita has said that our Sangha is helping so many ways. Many different people are working whatever they can do. But at the same time, I'm seeing that in society also, other people are helping in whatever ways they can help. Just this solidarity, not only in Sangha, humanity is coming out. So that is very, very important. So I think if that stays, that would be very helpful for all of us.
I was just thinking, now I understand why people confuse the two of you, why they think you're the same person, because you're both so thoughtful and so kind and so committed and dedicated to your Dharma work. It makes me feel quite hopeful about the future of the Sangha in India because, well, you two are there. You're like one being, one friend together, just moving forward and inspiring young women and girls, and I'm sure inspiring young boys and men as well to live a Dharma life and to build a better future for India and for Tri Ratna. So thank you both so much for coming and bringing your thoughtfulness and your kindness and your laughter.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us. It was really very nice to be here.
Thank you, Bhayanavita. I'm so glad you
managed to be. Thank you, Chandradasa. It was so nice to have this meeting and so nice to see you and Tararu there.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you,
Bhayanavita. And thank you. Bye-bye. I want to just say thank you to all our friends sending help from overseas, not only financial help, but they are just thinking about India in whatever way. I know that many centers, people are taking pujas. They are just thinking about us. Every day I get some messages and they just write, you are in our mind and heart and just we are thinking about you. those words is really, really very, very important for all of us. Sometimes I just tell my family members, they are not just thinking about me and my family. They are thinking about India. For us Indians, it's very important that this humanity is growing and this friendship is also growing. It's very, very important. So just I want to give thanks to all of them.
So a fantastic conversation with Abhay Navita and Tarasha Daya. Thanks so much to you both again for coming from India and taking your time in the evening when I'm sure you're tired and you'd like to be getting on with your day. Yeah, a lovely reminder as well for our community just to bear each other in mind. It's wonderful to help. We'll share links of ways you can help with the community in India to continue to work against the worst parts of the coronavirus epidemic. But as both Tarasha Daya and Abhay Navita said, just bearing people in mind means an awful lot. And that's really what this podcast is about, is the community around the world hearing each other's stories and remembering that you are part of the same community, at least the human community, maybe the Buddhist community, maybe the Triratna Buddhist community, with both Abhay Navita and Tarasha Daya and their stories talk to your story. And hopefully you'll continue to help exemplify Sangha and the best of our community in your own life. I'll be back soon with some more stories and voices from around the world in our Buddhist community. But for now, goodbye.